This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham, and we're coming to you from GM's design headquarters to talk about that automaker's top designer, Ed Welburn. Thanks for having us in.
Oh, it's great to be here with you, yeah.
So you're retiring after 44 years at General Motors. You're moving on to other projects. I read you wanted to be a car designer from your early days, and by that I mean you were drawing cars as a toddler. But I'd like to ask you about your first day at GM, a kid out of Howard University. What was that like walking into here?
Wow, just coming through the gates. I mean, I've known a GM design all my life. But the first time I drove through the gates, entered this campus, and saw that design building, it was pretty emotional. It was exciting. It was emotional. It was all of that. Then I came on into design, and it just, I don't know. It was like going to Disneyland.
You've risen to the top. You're the highest-ranking African-American auto executive, not just at GM, but in the industry. But when you were hired in 1972, I wonder what you were thinking about as you joined a basically all-white design staff.
You know, leading up to entering the building, I hadn't even thought about it. I had been on such a mission to be a car designer. I never thought about breaking barriers or the fact there may not be other African-Americans there. I learned that quickly, and it was a very supportive team. I learned that, yes, I was the first African-American there, and I learned very quickly that I was representing more than myself. I was representing a lot more people than that.
What was that like?
There was pressure. I mean, you know, as a designer, there's pressure on all designers because, you know, you do your sketches, you sign your sketch, and it goes up on a display board along with the work of others, and everyone knows your capability. It's right out there in front of everyone. You can't hide. And so, yeah, I did feel some pressure.
I kind of giggled when I saw your first job was designing Pontiac taillights. Having owned a couple of Pontiacs as a young kid, I thought, well, maybe I should thank him for that.
Well, you know, it's funny. And we still do this in the very first year here. You rotate through a number of studios, and this way you find out where you fit best. The company finds out where you fit best. Pontiac was on that rotation, and I designed a Granville tail lamp.
I want to get back to this idea of whether companies like GM, the opportunities at a design lab like this are open to black kids today in the auto industry. And if not, is this a function of, I don't know, schools, opportunity? What is the answer there?
Well, the opportunities are there. I absolutely want a very diverse workforce. The company does. The benefits are huge in many different ways. The challenge is that the design schools are not diverse. I recognized this a few years ago and met with the presidents of a couple design schools, and we created a program to help, you know, that reaches down into the middle schools and the high schools, and it's a great effort. It's really working.
It is working.
It is working. We're now identifying people who have gone through the program and are now entering into design schools.
It wasn't too long after you started working at GM that Japanese automakers started making some inroads into the American market, and the pressure was just starting. From the inside looking out, what was your view of that change?
Oh, it was a turbulent period because there were a number of forces. There's new safety regulations that were changing every year, bumper standards, crash, every bit of that, which is difficult for some designers to deal with. You actually had to have a bumper on a car, and prior to that, they didn't. And then there was the onslaught of cars primarily from Japan, and they were smaller, they were lightweight, they were fuel efficient, they were boring, but the quality was good and people liked them.
I've read countless reports that the corporate culture of GM might have been the company's worst enemy at that time. If that's true, how did it affect things at the design end of the business?
Well, you know, in those days, as a low-level or entry-level designer, I'm not so sure that I had an accurate read on what was happening at the top of the company. But like I said, it was a turbulent period, and the company was really scrambling, you know, because all we had were large V8 engines. We had had a V6 engine that we had sold to a small company, and and we had to negotiate to get that engine back. It was, I mean, really scrambling. And designing smaller, more fuel-efficient vehicles, which wasn't our nature.
How did GM's bankruptcy affect you? What was it like going through that period?
That period is an incredible period, particularly here in Detroit. The headlines, the news reports were full of stories of bankruptcy all day, every day, no matter where you turned. And for designers, I'm sure it's true for the rest of the company, but for the design organization, it's very difficult. Designers tend to be very emotional, passionate about the work they do. So I pulled all the employees together for a quick meeting. There were no overhead, slides, there was no PowerPoint, nothing.
No sales job.
It's just me in front of the organization. And I told them, I said, I know you're seeing all these reports. You're much better than what they're saying. And we're going to make it through this very dark period. And when we come out the other side, everyone's going to want to know what GM's capable of. And I talked to them about the work that they needed to do, we needed to do as a team. And it was just more of a rally. And they were, they were really fired up. And I got to tell you, I think we've done some of our best work during that period. It went into production later.
Car and Driver called you the man who brought beauty back to General Motors. How did you do that?
It's just, I think it's the way I work with our people. And beauty and design really begins with having a clear vision of what it is you want and having great proportions.
What did you see that they didn't see in the 80s and the 90s?
Well, I think the primary thing that they didn't see, well, there are a number of things, but primary would be to get great proportions, a designer and an engineer have to work together. It's that collaboration. That's how you get great proportions. Then once you have that, it's much easier to style a beautiful design. But if the proportions aren't right, forget about it. Forget about it. And in those years, those decades prior to me being in this role, the relationship between design and engineering was not good. It's not a natural thing for an engineer and a designer to work together.
You don't speak the same language.
Yeah, it's quite different. But to get those two, when you can get those two groups to work together, there's some great things that'll happen.
You also get a lot of praise for your truck designs. And by the way, I'm fond of the Colorado. I can just barely comprehend what you might be thinking about when it comes to designing a Corvette. It has to be sleek and so forth. But how do you approach a pickup?
Well, I think in part the approach is the same. No matter what the product is, number one, at the very core is understanding what customers are looking for in a vehicle. Just understanding customers, sitting down, talking to them, having a dialogue with them. Once you have that, then it's easy to move forward. Now, some vehicles are much more aggressive or progressive than others. And, with Corvette, you've got this great history of the brand to build on. And it's got to look like a Corvette, but it's got to look like a new Corvette. And finding that right balance is always a challenge. And every designer wants to design a Corvette, but it's not easy. It's not easy at all.
A lot of history there.
A lot of history, and yet it's got to be a really future-think vehicle.
I remember the Corvettes of the 70s. You sat down in them. You felt like you were sitting on the floorboard, and it was about that rough.
It was pretty low, and they had a high sill. And the thing is today, with the latest generation, C7, it's got that balance. The performance goes way beyond any other Corvette ever, and yet it's a more comfortable vehicle. I have a C7 Corvette, the top-of-the-line Z06, big horsepower vehicle, but I can commute to work in it. And at times it's not...
Even on Detroit roads?
Even on Detroit roads are pretty rough.
I guess we should say Michigan roads altogether.
Yeah, Michigan roads are rough, and you kind of have to find your way. But, yeah, I can commute to work in a Corvette.
Tell me what you're doing after you retire.
Oh, I want to be busy, but I want it to be a measured thing. I don't want it to get too overwhelming. Number of things, though. We're designing an all-new design center, basically doubling the size of this existing building. I've been working with the architect for some time, and I'll continue to work with that architect until that building is complete. And there are a couple other projects that Mary Barr, our CEO, has asked me to kind of shepherd in a way. So I'll have that involvement with General Motors. There will be some consulting I'll do on some other projects outside of GM.
Such as?
And speaking. We're not going to talk about
it. Oh, you can't talk
no,
about
I
that.
No, I can't really talk about that. Not automotive. You know, my allegiance is with GM, and I wouldn't work on another brand's
So we stuff. Won't hear you designing the next Tesla.
No. But you may be surprised by what I'll be involved in. I really enjoy fashion design, so there may be something there. I also want to spend time with design students, and I have a book project that's in the works. It's been a lot of fun working on that.
I can imagine. Yeah. I understand the new Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture is going to be exhibiting some of your work. Tell me about that.
That's so unbelievable. I mean, I'm kind of overwhelmed by that. It's something.
Are we talking about sculpted models? We're talking about drawings.
They have my entire. You know, I have saved every sketch I've done since I've been at GM. They now have that collection of sketches, photographs of projects, photographs of me working on those projects, a lot of film from a lot of the introduction of designs, that kind of thing. So it's a huge collection. I mean, and they take it very serious. We couldn't ship it to them. They had to come up personally with the right truck and package it themselves and off to the Smithsonian. Can you believe that?
Do you get a hand in curating what they actually exhibit?
I haven't even thought about that. I get kind of excited just talking about it with you.
Well, I imagine.
It's a big deal.
And when will that start? When will we see that?
I don't know. The museum opens, I believe, in the fall. And there may be a little bit of my work as part of that display when it opens up. You know, it's the main thing, it'll be in their archives, and there may be a show in the not-too-distant future.
I mean, being a big designer is one thing, but being honored like that must...
I know. I'm told I'm the first automotive designer to be in the Smithsonian.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Ed Welburn heads up the GM North America's design team, and you're retiring when?
Oh, June 30th.
It's coming quick.
It's coming up. I've got a lot to do between now and then.
Thanks very much for having us in.
Thank you.